So I read a story this week that it was captivating to me. The woman's name was Liz Neely, and Liz's job was about ocean science. Anybody here dream of being a marine biologist? People really are that thing. They really get to do that. And she, her specifically, was about goes about educating journalists about the ocean and connecting scientists and media people so that they could get the word out, so that we would care for our seas. And they were creating safe and sustainable habitats for vast and varied marine life. And she specifically works in the area of conservation of coral. So Liz got to be part of this group that was going to Fiji, which is not one single island. Fiji is an archipelago in the southern Pacific of more than 300 islands. So her team was going to Fiji to investigate some coral and see what they were doing there to keep the oceans alive. So she traveled from Washington, D.C. to Fiji. It took over 30 hours of travel by plane. So when she got to her hotel, she went to her room and crashed for the night. In the middle of the night, she woke up. She'd been dreaming about that she was having a head massage and woke up to find two cockroaches in her hair. And she said it happens in the tropics, she said, but it made it so she didn't really sleep that well. And so she was up early in the morning and waiting in the lobby to meet the rest of her colleagues who had traveled in other ways so that they could go to this village together. So she got to the lobby. No one was there. And she sat and she waited and she waited and she waited. And after an hour and a half, she finally decided she should probably find a way to the village herself. Something happened. She miscommunicated. Something happened. So she got her way to the village by connecting with somebody that she had met at the airport. And she got to that place, and then no one was there. So she waited and she waited and waited, and finally the caravan of scientists and media people and all of those people showed up, and they realized, oh my goodness, Liz, we forgot you. And they all thought it was kind of funny. Nobody was apologetic. Nobody was sympathetic. But then they got to go to work. So they had a meeting. They talked with people in the village, talked about how they're caring for the ocean around them, and then they got to go diving to see the beautiful coral and all of the fish. And then when the team was all done and so happy, they all went back to get ready to leave. And Liz said, I let everybody take a shower first, and she got all cleaned up, and she came outside, and they were gone. They had left her again in this village, and she wondered, what is wrong with them? And then she thought, what is wrong with me? How could they forget me? How could my dive partner forgive me? And how can we be a team if they can't even remember something as important as get Liz in the car? They had left her again in a village in Fiji. How did no one notice? Have you ever felt unseen or ignored? You ever felt like you've been forgotten or left alone? Have you been in a place where it seemed like your ideas and your words didn't matter? Or nobody cared about whether or not you showed up or if you had anything to say? There are stories after story after story of people feeling unseen, and even in our Bible. So as we continue in the book of Genesis, as we go back to the source, to the beginning of the very beginning, we find in Genesis 16 a story of people who feel unseen. Verse 1 says this: Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children. So we've already met this couple over the last number of weeks. We've got 15 chapters done. We're on 16. We've met Abram and Sarai, the people that up and left their home in order to follow God to a new one. And they are the people that are the recipients of an amazing promise from God. Abram was promised that he would be the father of many nations, and both of them together have this promise that their offspring would be more numerous than the stars. However, verse 1 of chapter 16 tells us that a lot of time has passed, and we know about them that they're older-ish, and they don't even have one child, let alone a galaxy's worth of children. And so you can sympathize with Sarai here. She's living in deep sorrow. The thing that she wanted more than anything was a child, and she did not have one. And she must have felt unseen. Unseen by her husband. He doesn't know what it's like for her. She would have felt unseen by the other women in her life, the ones that have children and don't seem to understand and can't seem to talk about anything else but their kids. She must have felt unseen by God. This promise had been made, but time is ticking. Have you forgotten me, Lord? But in the middle of the verse, there's that powerful word yet again, but. And but sometimes shows up to show us that God is going to change his bad situation into a good one. But sometimes but is an omen, and you get the sense of doom. Here's how the second half of the verse goes. But Sarai had an Egyptian slave named Hagar. And now you think, oh no, this isn't good. P.S. This is not a Sunday school story. That's why I just used the psalm instead of this story today. But here we go. Verse 2, she said to Abram, her husband, the Lord has kept me from having children. Go sleep with my slave. Perhaps I can build a family through her. So Sarai decides that she will find a way to get what she wants. If she's unseen, she's going to cause everyone to take a look at her. And her plan is Hagar, her slave, to become pregnant, and then Sarai's plan is to build her that baby into her own family. It's a brutal practice, part of ancient Near Eastern culture of slavery. And so her husband, as the verse continues, Abram agreed to what Sarai said. So after Abram had been living in Canaan 10 years, Sarai, his wife, took her Egyptian slave Hagar and gave her to her husband, to his wife. He slept with Hagar, and she conceived. In case you're wondering, this is terrible, right? I know this is a Bible story. We don't have to make it pretty. This is terrible. These characters, Abram and Sarai, are held up as examples of faith, and there are places where they walked with God and they followed, but this is not good. This is them abusing someone else. And the text says, when Hagar knew she was pregnant, she began to despise her mistress. Now that she's pregnant and she's gone through this, she's angry at Sarai to put her through this. And so she kind of rubs it in. And then Sarai gets mad. Verse 5, she says to Abram, you're responsible for the wrong I'm suffering. I mean, I put my slave in your arms, and now that she knows she's pregnant, she despises me. May the Lord judge between you and me. And so he says, your slave's in your hands. Do whatever you think is best. And Sarai mistreated Hagar, so she fled from her. It doesn't get better at that moment. Sarai is really upset, and she's looking for someone to blame. She starts with her husband. This is your fault. What are you going to do about it? And then her husband takes the easy way out. Do whatever you want. Go ahead. And then she blames Hagar, which is supremely unfair. Hagar's the one that has been abused, and she's abused more, and she can no longer take it. And Hagar runs away. And no one can blame her. Here is a woman who is truly unseen by those around her. No one has bothered to see her for who she is or to get to know her. They just call her Hagar, the slave. It's the only identity given to her. And then she is seen as a means to an end. Sarai and Abram use her to get what they want. But now with a baby on the way, she's seen as a threat or an enemy. And Sarai is cruel. So Hagar runs. And she's out on her own, on foot, in a strange land, pregnant, vulnerable, and alone. But, well, there actually literally isn't a but in this verse 7, but there should be, because it should say this. But the angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring in the desert. It was the spring that is beside the road to Shur. And he said, Hagar, slave of Sarai, where have you come from and where are you going? As she's running away, this amazing thing happens. Someone notices her. Someone sees her. The Lord, the God of Abram and Sarai, sees her. That God, not the gods that she left behind in Egypt, that God is paying attention, and God gets her attention through an angel, this messenger that comes to speak to her. And the angel asks her a couple questions. Where are you coming from? Where are you going? But suddenly she realized somebody cares. Someone cares enough to stop and ask her a question, not to demand anything of her, not to put her down. God already knows what she's doing, by the way. God already knows, but asking her these questions gives her an opportunity to be seen and to be heard, to talk about her life, and be in the presence of someone who is watching her and listening to her. She answers, I'm running away from my mistress Sarai. I always think dialogue in the Bible is shorter than I wish it would be. Like, I want her to say more. I mean, what else would she have said? Whole paragraphs about why she's running away. This is what they did to me. This is the treatment I've endured. Nobody sees me. Nobody cares about me. But it's just this short little statement. And the transcriber of Genesis leaves in this little summary, but the angel turns, says to her, "Go back to your mistress and submit to her." Can you imagine? I mean, here this is the chance. She ran away. Now someone has noticed her. It's God. Someone's noticed, and she's going to lay out her whole heart, and then the answer to what she's pouring out is, "Go back." I can imagine her saying, "Wait, no. I hate it there. Do you know how they treated me? Do you know what they're planning to do with my baby? Is there somewhere else I could go? I want to go home. I want to go back to my family and my country. I want to go where someone can see me. I thought someone was going to finally pay attention to me. Please don't say that I have to." And it's almost as if the angel's trying to get a word in edgeways. "Wait, wait. I have something else to say to you." And the angel says, verse, I don't know what that is, 10. "I will increase your descendants so much they'll be too numerous to count." Do you hear the echo of the promise to Abram here as he's saying this to her? The angel said to her, "You're pregnant and you'll give birth to a son. You will name him Ishmael, for the Lord has heard of your misery." Then he says some weird things about the boy. "He'll be a wild donkey of a man. His hand will be against everyone and everyone's hand against him." That's weird. "And he'll live in hostility toward his brothers." But this child's going to come, and this child is a child of promise also. This promise that God has given to Abram, there's going to be this child. She is also hearing this problem, and that's different. Someone has seen her, and on the road, something has changed for her. There is this profound difference in her life. And then she says this, "Hagar gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her. You are the God who sees me. For she said, I have now seen the one who sees me." And that is why the well was called Be'er Lahai Rohi. It's still there, says the writer of Genesis, between Kadesh and Bered. And Hagar now knows that she is not alone. She has encountered God and has this way to call God in a way that is profound. She calls him El Rohi, the God who sees me. And everybody else might ignore her, mistreat her, fail to understand her and not see her. But now she knows that there is one who sees. There is a God who sees. And she's going back to the home of Sarai and Abram, and life isn't going to get better. In a little while, in a few chapters, she'll be on the run again with her baby or with her child. But now she knows she's not alone. She's not unseen. She is visible to the one whose eyes watch over all of the comings and goings of all the people. And here we are back to the source. We still find at the very beginning of things, she's the first person to give God this name, the God who sees. And Hagar introduces us to this God, and then we read about how watchful God is. In Exodus, we find God saying, "I have seen the way that the Egyptians are oppressing the Israelites, and I'm going to do something about it." God sees Moses' mother trying to save her baby. God sees the daughter of the Pharaoh waiting in the water who discovers an infant in the river. God sees Moses when Moses sees the injustice in Egypt for the first time. And God sees Esther and Ruth and Rahab and Saul and David and Solomon. And then Jesus puts on a human body so he can see with literal human eyes. And Jesus sees Zacchaeus, and he sees Mary weeping for her brother who had died. And he sees a woman from whom nobody wanted to see, sitting by a well, and he sees her, and he sees a father whose child was dying and a woman declared unclean because of a disease. And he sees Peter broken and ashamed after he denied that he knew Jesus. And he sees children and the elderly and teenagers and adults. I'm with you, Linda. And Jesus sees the lonely and the lost and the losers and every little sparrow. He says that God sees every little sparrow, knows every hair on her head. He sees every little sparrow and you and me. And the God who saw Hagar, who changed her life and the life of her son, is the God who watches over us, who takes notice, who really sees us. He sees you and me on your brightest day and in the darkest night. He sees you when your tummy hurts and your knees ache. He sees you when you scored the winning goal and when you didn't make the team. He sees you when you can't see without your glasses and you also can't find your glasses. He sees you when you had to put a favorite pet to sleep He sees you sitting alone on a Friday night. He sees when you kept your job and when you had to empty your savings account to keep going. I don't know what's happening. I'm really sorry. He sees you when you feel invisible and unseen and overlooked and unnoticed. Ours is a God who sees and knows and cares and acts. And all of it means that you are not alone, and I am not alone. And if the whole world doesn't see us at all or care, there is one who sees us, and that changes everything. The question today is, what does it matter if God sees me? How does my life change? How do I encounter the world? It means that when I feel ignored, when nobody listens, when it doesn't seem like anyone cared if I showed up or didn't show up, there is one who cares all the time, who is seeing and knowing and leading us into the future. And it also gives us an opportunity to wonder who else needs to be seen. Because on the road, God uses that angel, God uses a messenger in Hagar's life to let her know that she's seen. There's someone physically there, I believe, for her to encounter. And I'm sure that God's using human beings all the time to let us know from each other that we are seen. So ask yourself, or ask the Lord, help open my eyes, Lord, so that I might see someone who needs to be noticed today. Who needs to be reminded that someone cares. Someone that comes and knows your name or notices when you haven't been in worship for a couple of weeks. Someone that sees and knows. How might we be people that join God in seeing in that way? I was the other delegate to our annual meeting online this weekend, and it's what stuck out to me, because I had this message in mind, was how many times I heard our denomination, like our greater church family, saying, we want to see people in whatever place they are, and seeing people all over the world, and seeing people who are the most vulnerable. And at the very beginning, someone came as they were making the agenda, and he said, I'd like to add something to the agenda, and it was a resolution about USAID. And it was this man saying, as a denomination, we can ask our leaders to not cut aid to people all over the world who need it so desperately. People who need to be seen. And God will use us to see them. To be seen and to see. What a beautiful way to live out our life of faith. Would you join me in prayer? Once again, Lord, these words from the psalm. Lord, we lift up our eyes to mountains, to hills, to skies full of lightning, to trees and to birds and to clouds, and we wonder, where does our help come from? But the answer is right here. Our help comes from you, Lord, the God who sees, the God who watches over us and does not sleep, the God who watches over us and gives us shade, the God who keeps us from harm, watches over our life, watches over our comings and goings, Lord, that is you, the God who sees. For anyone here today, Lord, who feels unseen and unnoticed, Lord, I pray that this word would go forth, that they would know that you see them, and then that you would place someone in their midst, in their vicinity, in their sphere, to see them. Lord, open our eyes to see one another, just face to face, the people that we meet, the people that we love, and the people that we don't even know, and people all over the world. Give us eyes to see like you do. Amen.